Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central, the August 31st edition of Baseball Central. It will be the only August 31st edition of Baseball Central this year, so it's unique. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker for your listening pleasure.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Man, if I were any better, I'm not real sure what I would do about it.
If you were any better,
yeah,
you'd be in jail.
Huh.
Think about it. Okay. The Jays, 5-3 losers to the Baltimore Orioles last night, and today, of course, a significant day. This is the deadline for adding players if you want them to be on your roster in the postseason. So you can expect, we expect, a flurry of activity today. We've already seen the Cleveland Indians and Oakland Athletics confirm that Coco Crisp has been traded from Oakland to Cleveland in return for Colt Hines, a minor league reliever who was with the Blue Jays. By my count, that means the Oakland Athletics now have 73 players in their organization who were at one point with the Blue Jays. And that's kind of the deal that's been done today. We expect, and those around the team expect, the Blue Jays to be active to some degree today. I've got to think, and Kevin, I'll bring you in here before we talk about last night's game and look ahead to Aaron Sanchez and Aaron Sanchez's start tonight. I've got to think this team is trying to bring another left-handed arm or a left-handed reliever in.
Well, you'd think so. What does do you think the start tonight from Aaron Sanchez will have anything to do with what they do with Liriano and when they do it?
Yeah, I think it'll have a lot to do with when they do it. I think ultimately Liriano will probably go to the bullpen. But, you know, the thing is, I talked to somebody at the organization yesterday about this, and I said, look, you could end up addressing that need for a left-hander internally, just by moving Liriano into the bullpen.
Yeah.
And his point was, I don't think we want to take a chance on that. In other words,
can't throw strike one.
Well, but not just that. In other words, hey, if we can get a left-handed reliever, a lefty specialist now, put him in the bullpen. Then if we have to move, if for whatever reason we move Liriano into the bullpen, well, guess what? Now we've got two left-handed options out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I'm sure this is not the last time they're going to skip a start from Sanchez,
no.
Right? So
I wouldn't think
it would be that much harder to move Liriano to the pen if you're planning on skipping Sanchez again.
I got to tell you, I did get an email today from a listener and made a real good point, I thought. You know, if given the way Gibby has kind of managed this team, and given the way Atkins and Shapiro have sort of run this thing, this gentleman, Anthony Batista, his idea is that really what's going to happen here is the Jays are trying to line up Sanchez, Estrada, and Happ to pitch against the Red Sox next weekend. So the way he's got the rotation worked out, Stroman Friday, Estrada Saturday, Happ Sunday, Liriano Monday, Dickey Tuesday in New York, Stroman. Then you get here at the Rogers Center, Sanchez against Boston on Friday, Estrada against Boston on Saturday, Happ against Boston on Sunday.
I guess, yeah. That's your best three. So,
well,
that would make sense.
And I would think, you know, without getting ahead of yourself, I would think if you're the Blue Jays, you probably do want your best three. Your best three starting pitchers in there. But I think that how Aaron Sanchez does today definitely has to have it has to have some sort of.
What if he has a bad start? A real bad start. Four innings, doesn't look like he can throw strikes. Because, again, I've been the one guy that said, and you have a little bit, that says 10 days off and not throwing to live big league hitters. That's going to do a little. Because he's a feel guy now with the breaking ball.
Yeah, you've been a little more about that than I have.
He can throw, you know, the sinker, he can start to throw the cutter a little bit, but it's about sinker command, four-seamer command on occasion, and flipping the breaking ball in any count when he wants to for a strike.
Right.
Is the 10 days off going to hurt the breaking ball. That's
well, Buck. I thought we had Buck Martinez on this morning on my show, and I asked Buck, okay, you're doing the game tonight. Aaron Sanchez is on the mound in the first inning. What are you looking for? And he said, I want to see a smooth delivery from him without extra effort. He said, to me, that's the key. If he looks like he's overthrowing, if it's taken a lot of effort, and keep in mind that his last start, you know, wasn't smooth.
Yep.
I mean, he gave up some runs. And Buck said, if he's out, comes out, and he looks comfortable and smooth, yeah, then it's okay. But if you see him overthrowing in the first inning, that's a sign that he's not where he needs to be.
I don't see how you can expect him not to overthrow. He's a young guy. Mm-hmm. He's a young guy where he's facing. He's in Camden Yards. He's facing the Orioles, who hit a lot of home runs. He knows he's going to have to make good pitches. He knows he's going to have to get ahead early in the count. He knows he's going to have to use the breaking ball.
Right.
He's going to have to throw the sinker for strikes. The Orioles, you can say what you want about them. They make you throw a lot of strikes.
Yep.
You know, there's certain guys in that lineup that doesn't. They're free swingers. But for the most part, that veteran lineup will make you throw strikes. And it's going to be interesting for me to see the overthrowing part of it. 10 mm-hmm. days off, you don't really know, you know. It's sort of like we see some of the Blue Jays hitters. When they're going bad, what do they often do? Overswing. Well, Aaron Sanchez, a younger guy, you know, he's had a good year. He wants to do well in Camden Yards. He wants to help his team. He wants to make a good impression coming back off the time off. I just don't think we can expect him to not see that. I'll say this. If he does, it might be a little bit more interesting to see how quickly he gets out of it.
Yeah.
That may be a little bit more interesting to me, because I think you can expect to see the overthrowing early in the game, the ball elevated, him not throwing as many strikes. It's how quick he can get out of it. Like, you know, mechanically, he's mm-hmm. that's what he's been all year. He's been mechanically sound. He can fix the problem quicker this year than he could last year. Well, to me, that's going to be a little bit more interesting, I think.
So we await the Jays making a move with Aaron Sanchez coming back to the team. It could be Bo Schultz going down. We do know this. Ryan Goins is joining the Blue Jays. Darwin Barney's leaving the team for personal reasons. And kind of a funny thing last night, this tells you about the sort of the age of social media that we're in. Ryan Goins was taken out of the game at AAA. And immediately Twitter's all alight because there'd been a report out there that Yasiel Puig had been claimed by couple of teams, and so people are looking at Goins coming out, and he was seen collecting his bats and going down the tunnel, and you know, and Twitter just took off. Before, and I mean, Ryan Goins ain't gonna be traded for
SLP,
but let me just finish. I mean, but it's that time of year, you know, and I'll admit, the first time I read it, I'm thinking, okay, maybe the Jays have made a deal, maybe they've moved Ryan Goins for a pitcher. I don't know, it's a time of year where you start looking for things like that. But right now, at least, Ryan Goins is joining the team for tonight's game. Darwin Barney is going to leave the team for personal reasons. And, of course, the rosters expand tomorrow. Anyhow, you can call up minor leaguers. So when Darwin Barney is ready to return, he will return.
Do you think Yasiel Puig would make sense for the Blue Jays? A right-handed dominant team. He's a free swinger. Does it make?
Next year he does, I guess, to a degree. Are you asking me, would he be my first choice? No. But if I lose Bautista and Encarnacion in the offseason, am I going to need another middle-of-the-order bat? Yes. Now, my question is, you know, would Yasiel Puig be the guy that I'd want to hang my hat on? And the answer to that is no.
I think the guy's got to be left-handed. I think we've seen enough right-handed batters here that the weakness the Blue Jays have is the guy that can spot the heater away, throw a breaking ball, start it away, end up off the plate. You get the weird hard swings from right-handed batters. They need somebody with some left-handed pop in the middle of the lineup.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And if you talk to Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, they will tell you that in the offseason, they are going to look to add another left-handed bat. They're going to replace Bautista or Encarnacion with a left-hand hitter. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And I don't know. Someone asked me the other day about Michael Saunders and what do you do with him? Do you offer him a contract? You know, a game like last night, the guy went 2-for-3 at his 22nd home run. I got to get a real good sense of what else I can do before I decide whether or not I give Michael Saunders a contract. In other words, Michael Saunders to me is a plan B for next year.
Can he play every day in the outfield? That's the question.
I don't think he can.
He's going to demand every day outfield money.
Yeah, I don't think he can.
That's the question.
I don't think he can.
Well, there's
your answer. That's my opinion.
Me too.
That's my opinion. I think he's a DH, a left-hand hitter. In an ideal world, he might be my fourth. He might be my fourth outfielder. But no, I don't.
Maybe if you could get him for a reasonable price, if you can't bring back either or whatever, whoever you're bringing back, and Eddie and it just Jose, who I think it all comes down to price. I think that's the ultimate goal here, because to me, you have to, if you're going to spend your money, it's either going to be on Edwin, or you're going to have to go out and get that big time left-handed bat to fill that spot.
I want to talk about last night's game. The Jays 5-3 losers. Kind of an interesting game. There were two matchups going into the game that heavily favored the hitters. Steve Pierce against Jay Happ, and he homered. And Michael Saunders against Ubaldo Jimenez, and he homered. Saunders is now 9 for 20 against Jimenez with 4 home runs. Pierce has 10 hits against Happ, five of those are home runs. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the Saunders at bat, though, because this kind of gets, and I want to be careful how I say this, because I don't want to slag Michael Saunders.
He's had a great year. Yep.
But Buck Showalter decided to let Ubaldo Jimenez face Michael Saunders third time around in a close game, knowing that Michael Saunders basically owns Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yep.
Now, I'm not a big Buck Showalter fan for a variety of reasons, but I don't think he's dumb. That indicates to me, I'm looking at a manager with a super deep bullpen, a manager whose bullpen might be the strength of his team. In a game with postseason ramifications, he's basically saying to me that he doesn't think Michael Saunders is good enough to get a hit off Ubaldo Jimenez the third time around. And it's not as if at that point, keep in mind, Russ Martin had led off with a single. So it's not as if Jimenez was sailing through the game. As a matter of fact, he gave up a one out single 2 innings before to Pilar. That was a race by double play. So,
yeah, I'll think this. I think Buck Showalter may have thought that Ubaldo could keep him in the yard. He's not going to give up a home run here. If he gives up a single, then I'll bring in Brock.
Right.
Or whoever he's going to bring in. But I think it's more of Ubaldo was pitching very well besides one guy. That was Saunders. Okay. I think it's more I'm gonna say I agree with you a little bit on
would
that.
Were Buck Showalter, would you have let Saunders face Ubaldo Jimenez?
No.
Or Jimenez face Saunders?
No.
No, neither would I.
Because of what the game meant to the Orioles. Obviously it meant more to the Orioles. Obviously the Blue Jays want to win every game against the American League East. But that game meant more to the Orioles than it did the Blue Jays. So you have to manage it basically like it's what? The seventh game of the World Series from here on.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I'm bringing in my one of my best relievers, and Brock is he's pretty good.
Does that tell us something about what the manager might think of Michael Saunders, though? Or am I reading too much into it?
No, I don't think so. I think you're spot on with that. I think a lot of things come into play, and I think the manager, Buck Showalter, was thinking at the least, if he gives up a hit, I can deal with that. I'll bring in one of my best relievers, you know. We can get through that, because after that you would have Upton Jr., which, you know, you bring in Brock. That's a pretty good matchup for the Orioles. You bring in Pilar. Pilar doesn't like Brock. So, you know, he's sitting pretty there if he only gives up the single. You know, if not, then you see what happens. Basically what Ubaldo did was fall behind. He fell behind 3-1, and 3-1 counts. A guy knows a fastball's coming. You throw 90 miles an hour. You know, you take your hats off to Saunders. He got a good pitch to hit. He put a good swing on it, and that's what hitters that are going well, that's what they do. They don't miss them. And, you know, it's a hitter's count. The hitter's counts in the big leagues, Jeff, are bad news for pitchers. They just, They just are, because it eliminates half of what you have to think about as a hitter. You know, you're educated guessing when you're hitting. And when you get in hitter's counts, you know, 2-1, Ubaldo likes to throw a split finger. Well, he hit the double, if you remember, Saunders did on a 2-1 split finger because that's what he likes to throw in a 2-1 count. Well, 3-1 in that inning with a guy runner on first base, probably going to think he doesn't want to walk me here.
Sure.
So what am I going to do? I'm going to look for a fastball out over the plate. What do you get? A fastball out over the plate. You know, we're not, when you go to the plate, you're not reinventing anything. You're just going there, hopefully educated guessing, thinking along with the pitcher and thinking what this guy likes to do. And you know, you got to take your hat off to Saunders for getting a good pitch and putting a good swing on it. But there's a lot of things that go into play there. It's, I think what you may be saying is the Orioles got away with one.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to say a little bit too is.
Well, you know, I mean, it was a two-run homer. I don't know if you got away with it. I'm just wondering what that says about Michael Saunders, that a manager essentially says, I've got a guy who, coming up to the plate, who owns my starting pitcher, and I've gotten more to Ubaldo Jimenez, frankly, than I probably thought I was going to get. But
sure,
you know what? What the hell? I'm going to let him have one more kick at the can, and then Saunders homered. Cliff Floyd of the MLB Network joins us. We'll bring Cliff in this discussion. Good morning, Cliff, or good afternoon, I should say.
What's going on, fellas?
I got a question for you. Aaron Sanchez is going to start for the Jays tonight. It's his first start in what, Kevin? 10 days?
Yep.
First start in 10 days, you're going up to the plate in the first inning. You're batting second, you're batting third. You're going up to the plate. You've got a guy on the mound who hasn't pitched, and he hasn't pitched. He might have thrown on the side, but he certainly hasn't pitched in a game for 10 days. Cliff, what's your approach as a hitter?
Well, a lot will tell with the first guy. So whatever my, you know, routine is, whether that's getting my gloves and getting myself in a position to get ready, whether that's going to get my helmet, I'm up on the top step making sure I see what this dude's featuring. I'm up on the – I think I'm out there even before the game. He throws his first pitch to see what his warm-ups look like. All these things because, you know, we're not a last-place team. Well, we're fighting just as much as T.O. is fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to be prepared for that. So, you know, and fellas, I mean, it's a great question because – If I'm not mistaken, the Marlins, Jose Fernandez missed a start.
Right.
Came out and they had a clunker, right?
Yep.
So you have to think that these things play a big factor in the mindset and the time off because I talked to Jay Happ last week, and I asked him about the six-man rotation. He goes, look, there's a reason there's a five-man rotation. It's routine. It's you know, just how guys set themselves up. It works. It's worked forever. So it's a lot of things and a lot of variables that go into it, but that would be my way of sort of, you know, approaching a guy that we were talking about just 2 weeks ago as being, you know, in conversation with Cy Young.
Yeah, now, Cliffy, obviously last night Jay Happ pitched. That's the first time all year I got to admit he looked tired to me. I don't know if you watched multiple innings of his or not, but, you know, I think we're – I may be nitpicking a little bit. He went 6 1/3 and gave up 6 hits and 3 runs. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But when he's, you know, the four-seamer in to right-handed batters, that glove side to the catcher has been his biggest strength all year. And when he misses, he's missing more in off the plate, so guys just take it. Last night when he missed, he was missing out over the plate. That usually tells you arms trying to catch up. He's a little bit tired. Did you see any of that from Jay Happ last night?
Well, you know, I did see a little of it, and – you know, I chalked it up just like I chalk up any other start from a guy that's performed really well as, all right, well, he's earned enough for us to see the next one, right? Like, really be the telltale. And when you're watching a guy like Jay Happ face or any pitcher face these big old lineups, I mean, even vice versa, when you're watching teams face the Toronto Blue Jays lineup, it's just different how they approach these hitters because you have to be careful. And Jay Happ, the human element comes into play just as much as anybody else. But you know, when you're attacking a team, you know, like the O's, I mean, one little mistake, they destroy. I mean, that ball off, you know, that Manny Machado hit, you know, those are mistakes that, you know, some teams he can get away with.
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting away with it with that type of team. So I see your point, you know, but I think at the end of the day, you know, we have to always sort of wait. I would wait till next start to go, yeah, he is getting tired. But, I mean, this is that time of year. You know what I'm saying? This is that time of year, just as much as you know, is when we start to see guys are trying to figure out how to get through these next five starts and put themselves in position, help their team win.
The Cleveland Indians, I think, made a nice acquisition today, made it official. Coco Crisp joining them from Oakland for Cole Hines, minor league reliever. I've always had a soft spot for Coco Crisp. I like the way he plays, good dude, all that stuff. It's a nice pickup for the Indians, though, isn't it? That's a depth player. You're getting a guy who's been there before with a little bit of pedigree and a guy who I think fits in nicely in what appears to be a pretty good clubhouse.
Yeah, it was a bad situation that I think Coco handled as great as you could possibly handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And KB, you can talk to that too, right? Just you know, how professional he was, knowing that the situation was a little difficult to handle, right? You got a young, you know, you got a kid that's coming to Oakland that's trying to play, and guess who wears it? Well, Coco Crisp was wearing it, you know, and Danny Valencia had the same situation. So I love the things he said. You have to be professional in this game. You have to understand that, you know, it is a business and things like this are going to happen. But it's a great pickup for the Indians, right? Because when you look at what they've dealt with this year, not having Michael Brantley, having a veteran guy come in that can help them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You need the veteran piece that's going to get you over the top and help you out. And they have some youngsters. It's getting that time of year where you might get caught deer in headlights type of situation with Tyler Naquin and some of the other young cats that they have. They've done a terrific job, but I think this is a huge pickup for the Indians right now.
Yeah, okay, Cliffy. You know, the last time we were on this show, and Jeff or me, whoever, asked you about Tim Tebow, and me and you both sort of laughed it off, you know, hitting fastballs upwards of 95 miles an hour. We saw his tryout last night.
Yeah.
Give me first thought. First impression, you see Tebow hitting and in the field. What was your first thought?
Well, very raw. I've bashed the whole situation a ton, KB. This is what I'll say, all right? You go to Winter Ball, and then we'll have a conversation this off season at some point when I come on the show and go, did you really think it was going to be this easy? Now, I'm not thinking that he thought it was going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, don't leave a sport where you didn't make it and then think that this is an easy one to go making it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's going to think it's easy, but, you know, to have the whole showcase when it's a ton of kids out there that need a showcase as well, right? It was a ton of kids we've seen throughout KPI. I know you have. I know I have.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get this type of platform.
Nope.
And I struggle with it because they need to see more. They need to showcase this. I mean, and this is one of the things where I feel like at the end of the day, right, when you look at the skill sport that the baseball is, I say the great story that could come out of this is he could have been a tight end or a running back or a fullback, and we would have said, man, look at Tebow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, figuring out a way to be successful at something that, you know, what he knows, I mean, it comes to him like no other as opposed to baseball, and that would have been a great story for me. So what I saw in my mind, we won't see on any field in the big leagues anytime soon.
Yeah, and, you know, Cliff, people talk about Michael Jordan and all this, and my response to that is always, look, Michael Jordan succeeded in baseball. I mean, we were talking about, or in basketball, we're talking about a guy who's the best basketball player I've seen, and he said, well, I mean, I've got to add my LeBron in there, but one of the best basketball players I've seen, and he said, you know what, I'm going to try baseball. And I think a lot of baseball people, they didn't like it, but, you know, when the guy who's one of the greatest athletes of all time says, hey, I want to try the sport, I think you're willing to say, all right, we'll let him have a look. Sure, why not? He's not going to embarrass the game. I mean, this is, to me, there's just something about Tim Tebow where I want to go to him and say, dude, did you not get a degree? Can you not get a job? Like, seriously, can somebody give this guy a job so he can settle down and just go away?
Absolutely. He will be great at every, I mean, football, at baseball, being a coach, being something that's going to keep him in the sports and keep his name alive and keep him as a head honcho, because everybody knows some people, you know, this good-looking, strong, athletic, you know, smart guy. Okay, great. But with MJ, I wasn't happy. I'm from Chicago. They tried baseball. I knew the numbers, what they were going to be, right? And I grew up, and everybody grew up watching Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard baseball, that was a monkey wrench for me.
Okay.
And I was just like, damn. Like, how? I mean, MJ, come on, bro. Like, I love everything about you on the court. I know the sport. And if I didn't know baseball, I wouldn't feel, you know, this craziness that I've been feeling the last couple of days. How, and explaining to America, you know, and Canada and everybody and everywhere else, that look, you know, this game is, don't make a mockery of it. Mm-hmm. Don't sit there and say the baseball, I got a shot at it. And for Chad Mohler's and even I respect Gary Sheffield and all these cats to come out and say, you know, hey, I see him in the big leagues. I'm going, what? I mean, Chef, I'll struggle with that one. Mm. Chad Mohler was a catcher in the game for a long time. He knows. He called pitches, right? So he knew when a guy couldn't hit off-speed pitch. I mean, he played a long time, 10 years. So when a guy stepped in the box, Chad Mohler knew if you could hit a fastball and when your butt couldn't hit a curveball to save your life. And I just – It's mind-boggling for me to hear some of these comments.
Yeah, now, Cliffy, there's a certain amount of guys in big leagues that you, when they're pitching, you just want to play behind them. You watch them, and you just can't wait to go get a glove and get in a position and watch him pitch. That's Max Scherzer. When I start watching him and the way he accepts the ball and the way he throws the ball and the way he wants the ball from the catcher so he can get on the mound and throw another pitch. And then you see stats of, you know, 61 starts with the Nats, and he's taken 9 of those starts into the sixth inning with no hitters. And, you know, just is he one of the pitchers that just not a lot of people talk about? He's really, really, really good, but it just seems like we don't talk about him a lot.
No, we don't, and we should. And I think, you know what, I found this a lot about on the outside looking in now, you know, on this media side, is when guys are good, KB, we forget about them. They're boring.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, he's supposed to do that. He's making $200-plus million. He's a star, and you know what? He's supposed to throw up, you know, straight, you know, goose eggs every night. No, you're not. You know, I mean, it's going to be a time where you're going to give up a few. And last night, he flirted with no-hitter through, what, 5 or 6?
Yeah, six inning.
Here we go again. So that's the type of dude you want as your ace. When we talk about aces, yeah, Clayton Kershaw, and you know, and now we talk, you know, we have some other guy, Matt Bum, and some cats. Kyle Hendricks, we're starting to talk about him, but we really don't want to give Kyle Hendricks that love. Max Scherzer is that guy we need to give more and more love to, because when you talk about bona fide aces, Max Scherzer is that name you want to put in that conversation, because when he takes the ball, you got to shot at letting your bullpen rest and him going 8 and possibly throwing a no-hitter. I mean, that's insane.
Mm-hmm. Cliffy, we're going to let you run. It was great to talk to you.
No doubt.
Thanks, Cliff.
As always, fellas.
Take care. That's Cliff Floyd, of the MLB Network. And, I get the whole thing with Tim Tebow. I mean, I understand that, guys are going – teams are going everywhere looking for players, but, you know, I would just urge teams to view Tim Tebow the same way they'd view any other, 23-year-old, 24-year-old guy.
I will say this, too. Well, there are not 27 teams at that yesterday.
Yeah.
How many teams are in baseball?
The two teams that weren't there were the Cubs.
There's three teams not there, right?
And Oakland, I think. Was Oakland not there? The Cubs and Oakland. I may be missing somebody. Okay. That's why God invented Travis, to find out who the third team is. It's not the only reason.
I just think that's funny that 27 of them were like, yeah, well, I'll meet you there. And the other three were like,
but you know what that is? Good. I think, you know what I think that is too? I think a lot of that is fear. What if Tim Tebow ends up? Oh, I think Boston. Was Boston not there? Hang on.
You know what? It was only the Cubs and A's. There was a thought that San Francisco wasn't there,
okay,
but they were.
Cubs and A's.
Okay, yeah.
Oh God, I lost my train of thought. No, what I was saying is, I think a lot of things. What happens is teams go, we better be there just in case, because the last thing you want is, what if Tim Tebow ends up being any good, and then somebody goes, hey, did you guys? And you go,
I just think this game is such a young man's game now.
Yeah. He's not an old man. He's not an old man.
29's old for baseball. Starting?
Is he 29?
He's 29, right? 29, yeah. That's old.
Jesus.
That baseball to start, and you're thinking about going to the fall league and then going to he's thinking about going to Venezuela for winter ball.
Good luck.
He's not gonna like that a whole lot. Because I've been there more than three times.
The lifestyle in Venezuela, he's probably thinking that he's going to Venezuela and he's going to be treated like he's a professional athlete. He's going to be a target.
Well, you know, just all, what it will show is there is a lot of hard throwers. A lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do in winter ball is they throw very, very, very hard. And we'll see that. That'll be the tell is if he can hit a fastball of upwards of whatever they're going to throw.
It'll be fun.
I don't know if fun is the word, but. I think it'd be more fun to watch him fall on his face, maybe.
I don't know.
Is that a bad way to say it?
Yeah, I think it is.
I'm sorry
about that. I want to talk a little bit about this is a story I've kind of been pounding on all morning, but Tom Verducci of SI wrote a piece on Mike Trout and why Mike Trout just doesn't get, you know, people don't, you used to be the best player in baseball. People write songs about you.
Yeah.
Now it's like the best player in baseball. He could walk into a lot of bars around North America. No one would know who the hell he is. I'm just going to talk about that, what that says about baseball, what that says about Mike Trout. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker for your listening pleasure. Oh, I guess I should turn this off. Barker and I were having a debate in here. Bit of a debate in here. Because we were talking about music, and I was telling him that the best Fleetwood Mac song is Monday Morning. Barker's a big Fleetwood Mac song fan ever since the time he saw Stevie Nicks at a party.
That's not why. I just like her music.
No, I like them too.
And the one time in AAA, I played a song and I can't remember what it was from Fleetwood Mac and I had a home run. And ever since then, I liked it.
That's pretty good.
But you can't
remember the song.
No, it was more about hitting the home run than remembering what the song was.
Did you just pick a song?
Just remember it was Fleetwood Mac. No, for some odd reason, the guy that just sort of flipped that on when I was walking up in AAA.
What Fleetwood Mac song would possibly refer to Barker? Dreams.
What's going on here?
Leather and Lace.
Dreams is a good one.
Dreams is a good one?
I don't think that was it. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. I'm very forgetful.
Because you know that there are, I mean, now it's all, everybody's got their own music. But back in the day, one of the reasons I used to like going to Pittsburgh is the Pirates organist would have songs for each player that would come up in the visiting team. Moises Alou would come up the bat. He'd play Here Comes the Sun. Get it?
Yeah, and whatever. Every time I went to Toledo,
and
played, they'd play the Price is Right song.
Really? Because of Bob Barker?
It was terrible, but that wasn't the reason why they were trying to make fun of me.
No, you know, it was Bob Barker. They weren't going to make fun of you.
That's not why. It was more of Barker and Bob Barker, and let's make fun of the guy, and then I'd go up and hit a homer, and that really worked.
But that's not making fun of you. Barker also likes the Bee Gees, by the way. So, this is good because I do too. I mean, we've got
What's wrong with the Bee Gees?
There's nothing wrong with the Bee Gees. I love the Bee Gees.
Every once in a while, the Bee Gees come on. I'm in my car, you know, going 3 miles an hour on the Gardner and start bumping your head a little, you know.
Oh, Never Going Back Again would be your Fleetwood Mac song.
Hey, I like music.
I know you do. I just never had you figured out as a Bee Gees guy.
Why?
I mean, I just didn't. I kind of associate Bee Gees with disco. You know,
my father really likes the Bee Gees too, so that's a little bit of.
All right, that's fine. There's not the Bee Gees. I'm big in the Bee Gees, big in Fleetwood Mac. Probably actually I like Fleetwood Mac a little more than the Bee Gees. Some guy says Barker's song would be secondhand news.
I don't get it.
I don't either. But it strikes me as being kind of funny. Anyhow, there you go. So a little bit, now you know Kevin Barker's music. You really should go on Twitter. So many people ask me, why is Barker not on Twitter? Honest to God,
I'm going to tell you why. You ruin it for me to ever go on that show. I come in here and listen.
Twitter's not a show.
You reading some things that are said and then what you say that you can't say on the radio.
Yeah, but I only read the bad stuff about me.
And it just, I have no interest in that whatsoever.
I get a kick out of the bad stuff on Twitter. I really do. There are a lot of disturbed people out here.
I'll let people tweet you and you can tell me about it.
All right. We got a lot to talk about. Actually, we don't. Oh, yeah, we do. We want to talk about, a couple of things coming out of last night's game. Gets lost in the shuffle with the home runs. Pedro Alvarez has a grand total, Kevin Barker, going into last night's game of 33 plate appearances against left-handed pitchers. He's hitting 200 against left-handed pitchers.
Yeah.
Pedro Alvarez doubles off Hap in the first inning, singles off Hap in the third inning, draws a walk in the fifth just before Manny Machado hits a home run. Now, I know you want to talk about the walk to Jonathan Schoop, but just a little bit about what it is about what Jay Happ was doing last night that would allow Pedro Alvarez to suddenly turn into
a lefty killer. I think Jay Happ, if he throws four pitches, three of those are going to be fastballs. So it takes all the guesswork out of Alvarez has real big issues with the breaking ball. From a left-hander, that sweeping down and away from him breaking ball, when he can eliminate that and a guy throws a lot of fastballs, you go up and simplify it. That's what baseball is all about, is simplifying things. Look, fastball out over the plate. When you get it, don't miss it. That's what Alvarez does against Happ, is he goes up looking for the fastball because he knows if he waits around long enough, he's going to get one or two of them to hit. And when he's getting them against him, he's not missing them. And a lot of it has to do with confidence. He's had success before. And that's what it's all about. There's nothing else to read into it other than the approach is there, and Jay Happ likes to throw a lot of fastballs. And Alvarez is a pretty good fastball hitter, not a very good breaking ball hitter. So it sort of feeds into the strength of Alvarez is what I just mentioned. Happ's a fastball thrower, not a breaking ball thrower.
Now, you wanted to talk about the walk to Jonathan Schoop.
But I'm going to ask you something.
Yes.
Schoop has
now, let me set it up for people. This is the eighth inning. Jason Grilli on the mound. Mark Trumbo looked awful, by the way. Mark Trumbo
didn't like the fastball up. Yeah, they figured Mark that out all of a sudden.
Mark Trumbo's popped up the second, and Chris Davis has struck out and broken a bat over his knee.
Well, obviously, I ask you if you've done that, and you said, yeah, I do that all the time.
No, I said I've seen guys do it.
Not all the time.
Saw Milton
You've
Bradley.
Never seen a guy
I saw Milton Bradley break a bat over his knee like it was a freaking toothpick. Yes, I did. I've seen it happen a fair number of times.
Dude,
have you ever tried to break a bat over your knee?
In the tunnel once, and I thought I'd basically died. Because you can't. You got to remember now, that's made out of wood, and it's normally really hard wood because it's in the big leagues, and you know, it's not supposed to break that easy.
Grown
men try and break that over their leg and they make it look that easy, yeah.
Who was the worst you saw person try to break a bat
Jason
over there?
Jason Phillips is the bullpen catcher, and I was playing with him, and he popped out or struck out. And if anybody's ever known Jason Phillips, he's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's very funny.
He basically did it for sort of a joke, but when he did it and it didn't break, well – we thought we were just going to have to go out and grab him by his feet and throw him back in the dugout because he basically fell apart. So it's funny. You know, he's a real funny.
Mm-hmm.
He never did it again. You know, that's one thing you do when you live and you learn kind of thing.
All right. Anyhow, so
I didn't know you were that strong and you could just walk out and break a bat anytime you want. So that's good news. I'm glad I know that about you.
I didn't say I could do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've said I've seen it done by people.
I'm going to bring a bat in here tomorrow on this show.
You know what? Melvin Upton did it in his first week with the Jays.
Again.
Suck on that.
A really strong, again, that's two people you've seen do it. And how many games have we watched?
I've seen more people do it.
Don't act like it's all every other day we see a guy.
It's happened a lot in TV.
Look like Buck Martinez said a toothpick.
Anyhow.
I'm just saying.
Okay, so never mind.
Whatever.
Never mind that. So two out, Jason Grilli on the mound.
He throws in five breaking balls.
Right.
Yeah.
And he draws a walk.
Well, yeah, the more thing was to me was where Russell Martin was setting up on the plate.
Are you saying you had an issue with the pitch selection?
I am not saying that.
Some people do.
Well, obviously. But no, I'm not saying that. That's a lot of playing time between Russell Martin and Jason Grilley. They've been around a long time. There has to be a reason why he was flipping five breaking balls in a row. Mm-hmm. The only thing I say is Scopes likes to swing. He's had 17 walks and almost 500 at bats coming into that plate appearance.
Selective is not.
Like to swingy.
Yep.
So what do you do?
Like to swing.
What I would like to see him do is get ahead with the fastball and then start expanding the zone with that breaking ball. Instead, he started, sitting up on the corner of the plate and wanting that breaking ball to go off the plate. And then you see a veteran guy standing on the on-deck circle going, and Matt Wieters going, okay, I just saw a guy get five breaking balls in a row.
He's throwing me a fastball.
No chance I'm getting a breaking ball the first pitch. No chance. Go up, look fastball, get it, sell out for it, get a big hit. That's what it's all about. That's my point is, when you throw a guy a bunch of things, it's about letting the guy on the on-deck circle see that, and it makes it easier for him when he walks to a plate. That's all. That's all I saw. I'm not saying pitch selection. There's a reason why those two have been around as long as they have.
But there's also
Martin and Grilley.
And there's also a reason why Matt Wieters hit
100%.
All right.
There's a reason why that is. So that's the only thing I wanted to bring up.
All right. No, that's well said.
A couple of the things go hand in hand on occasion. You always hear me preach, have the at-bat on the on-deck circle. Wieters did exactly that. He saw a guy in front of him get five breaking balls in a row. How many times have you ever seen a pitcher throw a breaking ball six times in a row?
It's just not going to happen.
Rarely, if ever.
And the other thing, is when another guy's coming to the plate. In other words, I just finished throwing five to one guy. Here comes another guy. I'm going to throw him another breaking ball.
And four of them were balls.
It's just not going to happen.
So, yeah, that's all I'm saying.
You're
made it real easy for the guy on deck to go up and guess heater, get it.
That's a good point.
And you lost a game. That's all I'm saying.
Good point. I like that. Very quickly, take a look around Major League Baseball. Rougned Odor, our friend.
Did you see the home run he hit?
Yeah, and everybody's talking about how, wow, that's like Jose Bautista's bat flip. Not even close. I mean, he pimped it, but he dropped the bat. Not even close. On a Bautista bat flip scale, I give that a 1.
Oh, I didn't know he had 500 homers. I saw Barry Bonds do that once. He's got a lot of homers. A lot of homers.
The Tampa Bay Rays beat the Red Sox 4-3. We will have, on Sportsnet today, the Rays and Red Sox.
Because I can say this, whenever I played a long time ago,
Guy
would do that. The next time that team was facing that guy would get it in the neck.
Let's see. Seattle does face Texas today, 2:05.
There you
Felix
go.
Hernandez.
But it's, again, the game's changed. It's not I'd that
hate,
way anymore.
I know. I'd hate to see Rougned Odor get hit because he's such a likable guy.
Not that way anymore.
Luke Mail and Maley, I should say, and Evan Longoria homered. The Rays beat the Red Sox last night. Did the Jays a big favor? I like that the catcher. I like Luke Maley. It's only his second home run.
Well, you like him because he had a home run, or you like him because he's good?
He's a pretty decent reputation. By the way, everybody's weighing in on Twitter. Jeff Samardzija broke a bat over his leg. Come on. Snyder, come on. I got like 20.
Okay.
Look at this.
Okay, since everybody's weighing in on Twitter,
Jackson breaking a bat over his head.
I'll go buy us all some bats. Everybody can come here to the Rogers Center, and we'll see how many people can break a bat over their leg.
But
that's all I'm
it.
Saying.
Look at that. I've got like five right there. Nonsense.
Okay? Until you tried it.
I'm not saying I can do it. I'm saying other people did it.
Okay? It's not like it's an everyday occurrence where you see people make bats look like that.
Noah Syndergaard, rapidly becoming my favorite baseball player of all time. This is a post-game tweet from Noah Syndergaard. He didn't pitch in this game, by the way. Very happy we won, but I want the name and address of the person who started the wave tonight. Hashtag ban the wave. Hashtag resist the urge. There you go. Jeff Samardzija.
Yeah, go
Jeff Samardzija telling you to not do the wave. The wave is evil.
Well, since he said it, just stop doing it then.
The wave is the devil's spawn. It truly is. Anyhow, that's it for Baseball Central today.
Go break a bat, everybody.
Kevin Barker says he's never seen anybody break a bat.
Never. Yeah, like what? Yeah.
Apparently, Brian Wilson broke a bat over his beard.
Good one.
Brian Wilson?
Can you do that?
I'm not saying. I'm just saying people do it.
Well, that's a new one.
All right.
Over his beard?
Stop it. For Kevin Barker and Cliff Floyd, I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks for joining us in Baseball Central. We'll be back tomorrow.